Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, a slightly delayed Baseball America Prospect Podcast this week. We're really sorry, but last night was busy. We had the 40-man roster protection deadline. We had to work up Rule 5 preview version 1.0, which I don't even want to know what time you went to bed last night, Jeff. And then I was working on the almanac because that's also going on right now. And I don't want to even tell you how many hours I've been working on that over the last week and a half. And I was working on that. And then we got no word of a pretty massive trade by really any standards with the Taylor Ward, Grayson Rodriguez trade, which we will talk about here on the podcast, but we will get back to our fix it series. But the 40-man roster protection deadline was yesterday, Tuesday. We're recording this on Wednesday. That also means that we're starting to have the names for the Rule 5 draft coming up next month. So with all that, Jeff, great to see you. We're just going to jump right in. We are going to the steak. We're not having appetizers here. We got Rule 5 draft preview version 1.0 up at Baseball America. We'll have 2.0 up probably earlier than we should because we both have the fever. But you really have the fever. I'm stuck in almanac hell right now, so I haven't had a chance to dive into as much as you have. Give us two names that jump out so far. You know, there's more names. We already have, I think, 13 up at baseballamerica.com. Yeah. But two guys who really jump out. And I will remind you that Jeff wrote up Shane Smith basically an hour after the protection deadline last year. And, hey, look who stood out from the Rule 5 draft. Shane Smith, the White Sox, former Brewer.
I think we've done that on the first day multiple times because I'm pretty sure that I had written up Thad Ward in a 1.0 and Ryan Noda, who were like top two picks in that draft. And then the previous year, I think the first guy that I wrote up, if I remember correctly, was Justin Slayton, who didn't go one, but was taken in the Rule 5, traded, and then had a phenomenal year, a couple of years now with the Red Sox as a setup guy. So we've done pretty well with some of our initial calls.
I would say that generally the best guys who are taken in the Rule 5 draft, I would say Liam Hicks is kind of a miss. We didn't have him. We knew about him. We didn't write him up. That's on us. But, you know, yes, I would say that if you read, again, our goal every year, one of these years we're going to get, there's going to be a major league, not the minor league, but a major league Rule 5 draft, and the draft's going to end, and we're going to do a high five and say we wrote up every single player who was taken in the Rule 5 draft.
Yes.
It hadn't happened yet, but the quest continues.
We get a lot of them, but not all of them. Always want to do better every year. But this year, I think, is the year. And JJ, I'm going to say right off the bat, I think there is a slam dunk Rule 5 selection right off the bat. And that's your Donnie Monegro, right-handed pitcher from the Red Sox. He fits into a bunch of different boxes that, in my opinion, all but guarantee that he gets taken in the Rule 5. Number one, he had the best performance metrics of any player that was eligible for the Rule 5 this year, full stop. He was in the upper minors, which is always something that we need. There are very few guys who get taken in the Rule 5, even less guys who get taken in the Rule 5 that then stick, which is always what our goal was. We want to identify the guys that are going to get taken and are going to stick. Even less of those guys have under 10 innings of double-A experience. He's got way over that at this point. Had eight or nine starts this year with double-A Portland, was really, really good. Good ground ball rate. I think it was maybe 55% or thereabouts. Gets swings and misses, throws a lot of strikes. But here's the main reason that I think this guy is a lock to get taken. Injured his elbow, had Tommy John surgery in late August. He is a guarantee that he is not going to pitch in 2026. So you can take him on. You can then roster him. We saw this last year. The Blue Jays took another injured pitcher that the Red Sox didn't protect in Angel Bastardo. He's a guy that might be ready to go this year, could potentially stay with the Blue Jays and be part of that bullpen. This is another similar situation where he had the surgery so late that you may actually have some time in the 2027 season to kind of slow roll him out and then maybe by midseason have him up with the big league club. So they have sort of like a year and a half almost to sort of come up with a strategy to protect this guy, slow roll him through his rehab and have him ready to go in 2027 when, you know, he already was in the upper minors. Had he stayed healthy, I think there's a chance this guy might have even pitched himself up to Boston by the end of the season with the way that they were, you know, sort of promoting so many talented young pitchers in their upper minors. So I think he checks a lot of boxes. For me, I think he's like number one right now on my pref list.
And we've talked about, we'll get into traits a little bit in a little while, but like he fits the injury as a trait. Although I will say the challenge of him to take him, I would say, is you have to be a team that's your, I would describe your 40 man roster as pretty open, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a tight 40 man roster, the way the mechanics work on this, and by the way, this video podcast today, it's for the geeks, right? If you're looking for us, we're going to go in the weeds. Because we know that a lot of you want that. So we're going deep on this. Okay. Because I've talked to front offices about this. One of the challenges, though, like I would say the picture perfect injured player is to draft the pitcher who's going to miss the start of the season, but is ticketed to return in like May or June, right? So what that means is you don't have to worry about carrying him on the roster the full season because you cannot option a Major League Rule 5 pick to the minors. You do that, you have to place them on waivers. Anyone else can claim them. Then if that goes through waivers, you have to offer them back to the original team. So can't do that. But at the same time, players on the injured list, they're on the injured list. That's not a problem. But you have to have 90 days active on the big league roster. So the ideal scenario is players not ready at the start of the season. You send them out on that month-long injury rehab stint, which, by the way, is additional minor league time, really. And you do that to get them ready. Then you carry them on the big league roster for 95 days, let's say. And then the next year, you have this optionable, talented young pitcher who is now just a part of your organization like anyone else. And he has options left. So if you want to use him as a reliever and he goes up and down and all that's great. The challenge of a guy like this is if you are going to miss the entirety of the 2026 season, you're still going to need those 90 days in 2027, but you are going to now be carried on the 40-man roster. During the season, it's not a problem. You get to a date in spring training, you put him on the 60-day IL. He stays on the 60-day IL for the entirety of the season. You can have that 40-man roster spot back. But during the offseason, there is no 60-day IL. So you will carry that player on the 40-man roster for the entirety of the remainder of this offseason, and then you will carry that player on the roster, 40-man roster, for the entirety of next offseason. So the one challenge that we have seen of these guys sometimes is you like the guy, you bring him in, and then you kind of look at it eventually and say, you know, but we need the 40-man roster spot. So I would say that a team picking him needs to be someone who's looking at it and saying, like, we're at a spot where we're not going to be up to 40. We're going to always kind of have a couple of spots to play with. If you have that, that is a perfect example of a guy to take. I think that that's, again, you hit on it. Like, that's the guy who is getting taken is the other thing I would say. They're not always staying, but we've seen multiple injured pitchers. I would say the most significant one that has paid off in recent years, there are a couple, but Garrett Whitlock would be the 2020s most successful version, which is guy coming off of TJ of an injury, and then boom, you bring him in. He's been a useful even reliever and starter. You know, there are guys like that, but it is also, again, the challenge of the 40-man roster. The other thing that, to kind of bring this back to kind of now explaining a little bit.
AJ, we're going to do things a little bit differently here. I am wearing the Perfect Jean, and I remember seeing ads for the Perfect Jean, like, most comfortable fit ever, perfect fit on your body. And I was like, I'm not buying it. Now I'm buying it, and we're showing it off on FT.
Please get off my desk, first of all, Scott. Second of all, I was with you. I was skeptical about Perfect Jean, and then I got a pair, and the fitting was perfect. And my body's not hard to fit because I got a big old rear and big old legs from years of squatting, and they fit perfectly. They're stretchy. They're comfortable. They're fashionable. They're everything I look for in a jean, and now I have an extra pair, and I'm going to wear them all the time.
FOUL15 is the code at theperfectjean.nyc. FT listeners get 15% off your first order, plus free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges when you use code FOUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off for new customers at theperfectjean.nyc with promo code FOUL15. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support the show and tell them Foul Territory sent you.
So yesterday, as we record this, was the 40-man roster deadline. this, we're going in the weeds, but we also don't want to leave anyone behind who wants to come along for the ride. So to explain, yesterday was the day that any player who signed as an 18-year-old or younger on June 5th of the signing year, that's their age date. Like if you were 18 on June 5th or younger, you get 5 years if you're signed in season. Five seasons, right? So if you're signed after the season, the next season, your first season. But 5 seasons before you are Rule 5 eligible. If you are signed as a 19-year-old, 4 seasons, right? So pretty much think of it this way. Almost all the non-Cam Collier version of junior college players, but all four-year college players basically are 4 years from draft day to eligibility. International players who signed as 16, 17, even 18-year-olds, high school prospects who were not old for their age. Brett Beatty, for example, of a 19-year-old high school pick. But most high school players drafted 5 years. So what we meant is that the 2021 high school class, 2022 college class, were classes where if you were not, and again, that's a generalization, and the 2021 international class, if you were a player from those classes, you were Rule 5 eligible if you were not added to the 40-man roster by yesterday. There is no, oh, wait, where our homework's late. No, you have to have it in now. If not, then you are available for the major league portion of the Rule 5 draft, which means that you are available to be picked by a team who then pays $100,000, pretty low amount in modern-day parlance, $100,000 to the team that you pick him from. You then have to carry that player on your major league roster. As we just said, you can't option to the minors for the entirety of the 2026 season. If you don't play, spend 90 days on the active roster, it carries over until you hit that. There have been examples in the past of guys carrying that for multiple years before they were healthy enough to reach Rule 5 status. Once you hit that, though, you are now a member of that new organization with no other, you know, restrictions. And then there is the minor league phase, which is for the true geeks. You're watching, looking at two of them on this podcast. But the true geeks, because that is for players who not only same eligibility rules, but are not only not placed on the major league roster, but then are not placed on the AAA roster, which gives you, I believe, I'm going off the top of my head, 37 or 38 players additionally that you can protect. So you are saying that you are then not one of the top 70, nearly 80 players in an organization. That is generally more for players who are viewed as useful org players, but we do have some examples every few years of guys who kind of go from that and end up being productive big leaguers. Omar Narváez, Justin Bour, there have been some pitchers in recent years. So there are examples of that, of players who become big leaguers. The key thing there, though, is those players, you don't have to carry them on a AAA roster or anything like that. You just pay your, I think it's $24,000, again, top of my head. But you pay your money to the organization you select them from, and then they're yours. They're part of your organization. No further restrictions. It's just like you basically, you just draft them off the roster, and then they're yours. That's my very long-winded explanation to then set you up, Jeff, to ask the other question, which is, we saw the 40-man roster protection deadline. We wrote up, I believe, 80-some players yesterday. Any surprises, anything that really stood out, any trends, anything that really jumped out to you from our roster deadline portion of this?
Did you feel, I'll pose a question back to you. Did you feel as if more players were protected this year that maybe wouldn't have been protected in previous years? Particularly when I looked at pitchers, I felt like there were a lot of guys that I was like, oh, I was kind of fringy on whether that guy would get added or not. It felt like all of those fringy guys were added more often than not. I don't feel like there were any big surprises in terms of guys that were left off that I anticipated would have been added. So I would say that like less surprises, but more surprises in the sense of like, I'm not shocked that David Sandlin got protected by the Red Sox. I'm not surprised that Shane Drohan got protected by the Red Sox, having already been taken in the Rule 5 draft. Another wrinkle here that I'll explain. Had he been left unprotected this year and then selected again, all of those roster requirements that you typically have with a Rule 5 pick go away. Whatever team took him, if he had been unprotected, would have then sort of owned his rights, or however you want to say that. So he was somebody that I'm not shocked they protected, because he was good enough this year in AAA, had already been returned to them. They had an open roster spot, and gives them some upper minors pitching depth, whether that's as a long guy out of the pen or a spot starter. I was a little surprised that Tyler Uberstein was protected, considering he could have been, I think, a solid fill-in or a bullpen piece or a September call-up at the end of the year. They didn't do that. They did end up protecting him. I wrote a lot about his background, but beyond that, he has some really interesting traits, a really flat four-seam fastball that drove a ton of whiffs in AAA, had one of the highest four-seam fastball whiff rates throughout the minors. And just, you know, an interesting kind of gritty kid. You can go and check out the story that I did a couple months ago on his journey to professional baseball, really inspiring stuff. But outside of that, I mean, I think just looking at my teams, I wasn't very surprised by anybody that got added. But some of the fringe guys in other organizations, like Khalil Watson, who we had some questions, could they add him? Could they not? He had a bounce back year this year. He was added. I don't know if you feel the same way, but there were a lot of those fringe guys where I felt almost universally they were added, and there were a few more DFAs than I had remembered in previous years, maybe a couple less trades.
I would agree with you. I think there's two things that we're seeing now. Like, I think at this point, you know, good piece by Ian Kundle over at Baseball America. We're going to talk a little bit more about traits and all. I think everyone kind of has an idea now, more of kind of an agreement on what kind of players are logical to get picked. We're not going to see anything like we used to see. Like, I mean, this is right when I started at Baseball America. There was a year where everyone looked at the Pirates protections and front offices around baseball were like, what are they doing? And it was like, and everyone was lining up to just take like Pirates players one after another at the top of the Rule 5 draft. You're not going to see something like that, because again, I feel like now, even when teams lose players, we're dealing with probabilities, right? So someone will say, yes, we're going to lose this player. They may get picked, but they might get offered back. There's a 70% chance we're going to see them picked, where there's a 30% chance that they're going to stick. And so they put them on the 40-man because they need the 40-man roster spot. Or I would say now, again, when we talk about this risk aversion of having players picked, I think everyone realizes that optionable up and down relievers are valuable. And so players who a decade ago, it would be like, look, he's an up and down reliever. We're projecting him to throw 35 innings in the majors for us next year. Let's leave him unprotected. Those players do not get are protected now, almost without fail. The AAA, the guy who's going to be in your AAA bullpen to start the year, that guy, if he has options, is going to be protected, because everyone now knows those are the players that everyone in season is looking for. You have your closers, you have your high leverage relievers who everyone's like, it does not matter if Aroldis Chapman has options left or not. You're not optioning him. But every team in Major League Baseball wants some guys who are essentially the pawns on a chessboard, right? I hate to say it, but that's really what it is. It's like, we're going to send this wave in now, but now that we've survived that brutal road trip that we had, where we had a doubleheader and we're gassed. Okay, you're going down, and now we're bringing the next guys up. Those guys get protected now, and a decade or 15 years ago, a lot of times they weren't. And a lot of times 10, 15 years ago, they weren't getting picked, because the guys getting picked, which teams have gotten a lot smarter about, were the A-ball pitchers who threw 100 and had no idea where it was going. And then that guy would show up to spring training. He'd hit the ball, he'd hit the backstop, he would never hit the strike zone, and they get released. Those guys don't get drafted now. Those guys are like, nope, sounds great. Julian Fernandez, who was straight, you know, he throws 102. Nope, that guy used to get picked. He doesn't get picked now. The guy who throws 93 to 95 but throws strikes and has a slider or has a splitter or has a cutter or some kind of pitch that will get you
extension.
Yes.
I felt like the guys that we missed on over the last couple of years, and it's become a greater point of emphasis for me, is like, if a guy has, you know, outlier extension 6'8" or greater, those guys almost universally seem to at least be discussed by front offices.
I would say when you say extension 6'8" or greater, I would even give a slight tweak to that. Take a pitcher's extension, subtract the height.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Which is why
a 6'7" pitcher and he has 6'8" extension, it's like, no big deal.
Yeah.
If you take a 5'11" pitcher with 6'8" extension, you're like, that guy's getting picked.
I had two of them in the Rule 5 Volume 1 preview. And Hayden Mullins, who's a 6-footer, he's shorter than me and I'm 6 feet, though my kids will argue with that. So he's not quite 6 feet, measured at like 6'6" extension on average on the fastball. Tyler Vogel's another 6-foot right-hander that has about 6'5", 6'6" extension on the fastball. So they were guys that I honed in immediately on, and there's others that are in my list of 2.0 and beyond.
So that's one thing. The other thing I would say, though, also is we saw position players, lower ceiling position players who could get picked, were protected in cases where I would say in some cases, like, okay, to give an example of a couple, Christian Franklin, who the Nationals protected. Christian Franklin has been written up on Rule 5 draft previews before.
I thought he was going to get taken last year. Yeah.
Right. But he's the
Said I wasn't wrong. He should have been.
But he's the embodiment, though, of the guy, the outfielder is on the AAA big league line, right? To be honest, if you take him, you are removing one of the pieces of value of Christian Franklin, which is those guys are most valuable if you can bring them up. They're part of the fire brigade as well. They sit in AAA. When you need them, you bring them up. When you don't need them, you send them down. You can't do that if you take him in the Rule 5 draft. But this year, again, the Nationals have added him to the 40, which means now he fits the more traditional role we just talked about, which is you can send him to AAA. He can spend the year in AAA and come up and down as you need him. Leo Balcazar, who the Reds protected. That one was, to me, a little bit of kind of a guy on the borderline. He can play shortstop, second base, third base. He's got double A time, so you could see him getting picked, but at the same time, he's not better at that role than a lot of major league veterans, I would say. In 2026, he's not going to be better in that role than a lot of veterans who you can probably sign to minor league deals with an invite to spring training and see what you get. I say that teams now, though, look at it and say, I'm going to protect that guy, rather than get burned on this, right? Because every now and then, some of those guys do actually pop. So that, to me, was another one that kind of jumps out a little bit. But, like, yes, I would say that overall, the big thing about all of this is
the countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from avid gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Teams are much more conservative about protecting guys, but they've also realized like what you don't see now. And this kind of leads into another part of this, which is check out Ian Kundle's piece over at baseballamerica.com of what gets you picked and what doesn't get you picked in the Rule 5 draft. I hit on one of the things, but you've hit on a couple of others too. A-ball guys generally now don't get picked. And A-ball guys who do get picked don't stick. There are exceptions to this. And by the way, if you look back over the years, like Yoan Santana is one of the best Rule 5 draft picks of all time. A-ball guy. Like there are examples that you can point to. But now the pitcher with really good stuff who's yet to pitch above high A is less likely to get picked than the guy who was in triple A or double A last year with less stuff but more strikes, right? Like that's one of the key traits that stand out. But the thing that I probably that opened my eyes in it was, and it's going to be reflected in our Rule 5 preview this year. If we're doing our Rule 5 preview right, 80 to 85% of the names that we put in there are going to be pitchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that jumped out to me is how few position players get picked out.
Yeah, so few. And I think the guys that do get picked, it's not the offensive upside. It's not the stuff that maybe gets them, you know, videos shared on social media channels and gets them ranked in top 30 lists or on prospect lists that are fantasy slanted, that sort of thing. It's not those kind of guys. We saw, you know, a Davison De Los Santos get picked and get returned and really hasn't been able to establish himself as a big leaguer since. I think more often than not, the position players that do get taken, they got to be plus defensive shortstops or middle infielders with versatility and the ability to play a variety of positions, or they have to be guys that you can count on to catch maybe 30% of your games. I think Liam Hicks was a miss last year for us because we kind of didn't think about the value of, you know, catching defense and the ability to play multiple different positions at an average or so or fringe average level. I think those are the kind of guys position wise that get taken. It's not going to be the offensive upside, and it's a little bit harder for us to identify those guys programmatically because so much of defensive evaluation is kind of opinion based. You know, you'll talk to people and get a 70 on one guy's glove and get a 60 or a 55 on another. So I think just being able to sort of establish that stuff a little bit harder. But those are the position guys that get taken, which is why you said 80 to 85% of the names we're going to put in there are probably going to be pitchers.
I'm looking back at our preview from last year. The other thing that stands out is how many guys get unprotected one year because they're not ready and then get protected the next. To just give you a couple of examples. So like, okay, Ryan Ward, who had a great year in AAA for the Dodgers, protected this year. Abby Ortiz, protected this year. We wrote him up last year. Christian Franklin, protected this year. We wrote him up last year. Reed Trimble, protected this year. We wrote him up last year. Brian Torres, protected this year. Wrote him up last year. Like, you could just go down the list. I mean, that's not
Riley Martin. On the pitching side, was Riley Martin from the Cubs another one too? Big lefty.
Yep, Riley Martin was on there. You know, Noah Murdoch. Again, other guys who, by the way, reached the majors this year and are on 40-mans because of that. Not just guys who were added at the deadline. Coleman Crowe added this year. Like, it really does jump out. Like, you know, hey, okay, I will strain myself patting ourselves on the back. But we were identifying the talent. You know, some of the guys who didn't get picked are like guys who's like, okay, well, you know, check back next year. You know, that's one of the things that also stands out with this, right? Is these are guys who, again, everyone's kind of generally speaking, reading the same, you know, book, right? They have the same definitions of this. And so there's a little bit less. There used to be an art to this. It used to be something where I would talk to people with teams 10, 15, 20 years ago and realize like, oh, they're on such a different perspective. I remember telling a team that one of their players was going to get picked the next day. And they're like, he's not going to get picked. No one in this kind of category is picked. I'm like, he's getting picked. He's going 1-1 next day. And he did. He got picked the next day. Those kind of things back then happened. Now, when you do see a guy picked, a lot of times like, yeah, we knew that was a risk. Yeah, but we were willing to take it. The other thing that does stand out, though, and this is one of the other parts that I love about the Rule 5 draft, MLB teams love to push decisions down the road. You know, they do. But when it comes to the Rule 5 draft, that's the day that you have to kind of publicly proclaim. You can say everything you want about your first round pick from 4 years ago or 5 years ago, about how he had some rough times early on. He had this injury or whatever. This is the day that you have to basically say, we actually believe that or we don't. Because let us just be clear here. If you do not protect a first round pick in the first year of Rule 5 eligibility, it is a failed pick. And when we say this, I've studied this. I have every pick who was unprotected for 10 years on this now. And Cole Reagans is an example of someone, injuries, pandemic, all that. Cole Reagans was hurt, unprotected, and has gone on to be a very productive big league starter. Therein ends the list of like 2+ war players who are left unprotected. You know, there are not the bounce back candidates. It is something where if you are unprotected, it is almost without fail. There's like 65 of them, and the other best names are not close to a Cole Reagans level of production. But this year, there were 27 players first year eligible, and 10 of them were left unprotected, which is the worst protection rate by far. On average, 80%, 4 out of every 5 first rounders get protected. And when I say get protected, like Jackson Merrill is a protection decision this year. Padres didn't have to decide because he's been a productive player for them for multiple years. So I'm not saying like they were added to the 40 man yesterday. In a lot of cases, in most successful cases, they're already productive big leaguers by the time that their eligibility comes up. But it does really stand out. The other thing that really did jump out about it is 10 first rounders left unprotected. But the other thing that really stands out about that is we saw, and this is unusual. So Frank Mazzucato and Benny Montgomery were top 10 picks for 2021, and Jacob Berry and Gavin Cross were top 10 picks from 2022, high school guys of 21, college guys for 22, who were left unprotected. There had only been 7 top 10 picks left unprotected over the previous decade, and Kyler Murray's kind of a, only halfway counts because, yes, he was left unprotected. He was playing quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals at the time. There was not much risk that they were going to lose him because he had never played a game of professional baseball.
Can you get taken this year? There's a chance there's been rumors he's coming back to baseball. So is there a chance he could get taken this year?
I think that contract that he has probably works against him ever, you know. So, but you know, hey, it's Russell Wilson was taking the minor league phase multiple years in a row for this reason. Cause he was like, you just bring him into spring training. He comes in, you know, whatever. But 10. And I think it also is worth noting, like the Royals had 2 top 10 picks, Mazzucato and Gavin Cross. That is something that you just really want to avoid ever doing. They've had 3 now in the 20, you know, cause they also had Ace Lacy recently. So the Royals have bounced back, but they did, like, if you say, like, where do you kind of have your regrets? That's a regret when you have 3 top 10 picks that you did not end up protecting in their first year. The flip side of that I did want to point out, story over at baseballamerica.com, but the Padres and the White Sox have both had 11 top first-round picks over that time and have protected all 11. There's 9 teams that have protected 100% of their first-round picks, but they are the only ones who had that many first-round picks and protected them. So before we move on to our Grayson Rodriguez trade analysis, the last thing I wanted to ask you is like, okay, you've kind of hit on this already somewhat, but is there any traits that we haven't hit on of guys? Like if you want to do your own scouting on the Rule 5 draft of what you want your team to take, are there any other aspects that people should look for that really do jump out?
Yeah, I think, you know, I had written an article on this a few years back. Ian kind of updated that and dug in on some other areas. But I think like his article kind of illustrates it pretty well, which is there's a certain level of like baseline production in the upper minors that more often than not, we'll say 80% of the players pick, particularly pitchers, kind of fall into this category. You know, it's walk rates under, I think, tech really under 10%, but under 12% is kind of like that breaking point, that anything over that, you're kind of in the fringes of guys that have been taken in the Rule 5. If you do have a walk rate that's higher than 12%, you probably have to have a strikeout rate above 26%. Anybody that's been taken with a walk rate that high has had at least a strikeout rate of 26% or higher. Having both, you know, being under that in terms of walk rates and being over that in terms of strikeout rates, I think are important. I think that ground ball rate is also important, particularly kind of above that 40% threshold. Once you show the ability to maybe generate ground balls at a 45%+ rate with strikeouts and command, I think kind of checking all of those boxes, you're probably fishing in the right ponds and lakes there in terms of the, you know, the type of players you're going to be able to identify in the upper minors pitching wise. A lot of this stuff, honestly, like I download the full minor league leaderboard for all pitchers and on FanGraphs, and I create sort of my own custom report because I'm a subscriber to FanGraphs, and then just export that out and, you know, put it into a spreadsheet and identify who's available and eligible for the Rule 5 draft, and then sort of put in third benchmarks, and that allows me to identify that stuff. I then factor in the non-public pitch data, which helps us go an additional step. But a lot of that baseline production kind of puts you in the right spot. And then you can kind of do your own research in terms of, you know, chomping around the internet, seeing if there's anything on Prospects Avant from either low A performance or triple A performance. And you can kind of piece all that stuff together. And I encourage people to do. We love hearing new names. And, you know, I know there's a couple of readers out there that get really active during the Rule 5 and are always pinging me and JJ with, hey, have you looked at this guy yet? Mm-hmm. You guys have written about this guy. I was looking at him. He's pretty interesting. And we've gotten some good suggestions over the years from readers, frankly, that are sickos like us. We appreciate it. We love that.
We do. We really do. We are sickos like you. If you are, if that is a sicko like that, you are one of us. One of us. One of us. The other thing I would say is that, and this is the trickiest part of this, right? This is why I think, again, also why pitchers are the ones who get picked so much. Shane Smith, perfect example of this. We like Shane Smith a lot. We had Shane Smith and Mike Vassell both had very good years, both in our preview. But Shane Smith, what made him so great in 2025 was a changeup that he added in the offseason. And that's the other part. I would say what's really like the third level, and this one's really difficult, is like identifying a pitcher whose pitch mix may not be where it needs to be right now, but maybe can get there, right? So there is always the argument of someone who can't spin a breaking ball, right? Okay. Nowadays, I would say there are a lot of teams who feel like that they can teach you some kind of breaking ball. They could, they lay out the tray of breaking balls, and they say, try this one. Oh, that didn't work. Now try this one. Then try this, try this. And eventually they feel like they can get you to one. So you can have something like that. Or you can see a guy who, for instance, was pitch mix was probably not ideal for what they do, right? Again, we see less of this now, but not optimized. And a team may think, hey, if we switch them from this to this, we think that that will then make them a useful reliever where maybe they weren't. But as you hit, they kind of have the underlying performance already. And then you're thinking you can unlock another level. It's not something, it used to be that you would literally, I would describe it that used to be that the Rule 5 draft was kind of like the 5th through 15th round of the MLB draft now, where teams now look at college pitchers like, I love him. He's got an 80 ERA, but he's got a great arm. We can fix him. And then they go draft him, and then he gets better in pro ball. But they have 4 to 5 years to fix that. The Rule 5 draft used to take some of those guys. Terrell Young, to me, is the one that always stands out. Threw 100 back when 100 was really odd, really rare. Threw 100 was of the Reds. The Nats took him 1-1. Guy had no idea what he was throwing, you know, no idea where it was going, never had any success, never had any experience above A ball, I believe, at the time, never pitched for the Nationals. I mean, like, basically never had any chance of sticking. Those kind of guys used to get taken. They don't get taken now. Now it's guys who already have had some success, and then you add something to it. But before we leave, we also have to hit on what I would say both of us, you know, we've talked about a little bit offline before this. Let's start with a fascinating Orioles-Angels trade last night. The Angels trade Taylor Ward, outfielder who hit 36 homers, career high 36 homers for them in 2025. He goes to the Orioles. The Angels in return get right-hander Grayson Rodriguez, who was obviously one of the best pitching prospects in baseball a few years ago, struggled in 2023, kind of went back down, kind of figured it out a little bit, had a very solid 24 season for the Orioles before going down with an injury, pitched 116 innings that year, but did not finish the season for them, did not pitch at all in 25. Then at the end of the season, near the end of the season, it was announced he had elbow debridement surgery, which is essentially he had bone chips in there that were rattling around. They removed those. Not Tommy John, but it is. I've had people tell me before that bone chips is something when it's rattling around, that's never good for a ligament either, right? For the stability of a ligament. So, and the stunning part of this trade is that while Ward obviously had a very productive 25, he is in the final year before free agency, will be 32 for much of the season, and will probably make an arbitration $12, $13, $14 million this offseason for next year. Rodriguez has 4 years of team control remaining, is not yet at arbitration, and is basically a young cost-controlled pitcher. I'll just kick it to you, Jeff. Like I would say that the way that this makes, I struggled with the explanation of this. And I talked to people I know with different other teams, and they said, like, yeah, if you just look at this purely on the surface, cost-controlled young starting pitcher, even with injury risk, versus 1 year of a productive, but not five war, four war outfielder, a productive slugger who was probably, if you're hoping for a three war season from, who's making money right now. That calculus does not add up for most teams. What do you take away? Like, what is your sense of this trade?
The feeling I get, you know, with the teams involved, and you know, I'll be honest, I've struggled to try to wrap my head around some of Baltimore's roster building over the last couple of years, where they had this golden generation of players. And let's just contrast it with the Blue Jays, who the run of that golden age, you know, that young core that came up might have just ended with Bo Bichette probably walking this offseason. But they always, maybe things didn't work out. They constantly tried to supplement that group with good veterans. They spent a lot of money going out and getting maybe not frontline pitching. Gausman probably falls into that category, but at least number three type of starters. And they had a lot of those guys still remaining. And we didn't see Berrios and some of these other in the playoffs because of injuries. The Orioles haven't done that. They tried to, for multiple years now, outside of that Corbin Burnes deal, which they had for a year, they've tried to sort of fit a square peg in a round hole regarding starting pitching for a competitive team. They just haven't had the horses. They haven't had the guys in that rotation. The fact that they were willing to move on from Grayson Rodriguez makes me think that there was more concern regarding the medicals and just how healthy he's going to stay in the coming years, that they wanted to sort of get out from under it while they could. They have a lot of outfielders, though. You know, adding Ward, I don't really necessarily understand the return for them. I think I was looking today and there's probably five or six outfielders on that roster now that have like full-time MLB seasons in the last couple of years.
Okay, let's just go through it. Colton Cowser, Tyler O'Neill, by the way, signed last year as an offseason for 3 years, $50 million. And is basically, if you ask, what does Tyler O'Neill do? Tyler O'Neill, if you said, what is his closest production comp that you hope to get? It would be Taylor Ward. In their good years, there are right-handed power hitters, right? I'm not saying that there aren't distinctions between them, but they're 31-year-old right-handed power hitters who are making like, you know, in the mid $13 to $15 million range. And they have him signed for next year as well. And if they try to trade him after a terrible 25 season, he will be a dump if they trade him. They will not get value for him in return. That will be, we'll take on your problem contract if you'll take on ours kind of thing. That, and then we've got, as you just went, Dylan Beavers. Then you've got Heston Kjerstad. They got Jeremiah Jackson, who came up for them at the end of last year. Nice minor league rule five pick. I mean, minor league free agent pickup. They just signed Leody Taveras to a deal. They then have at AAA, they added Reed Trimble to their 40 man. They have Enrique Bradfield and they have Judd Fabian, all slated to be at AAA. They have drafted five outfielders, the first called outfielders in the first round since 2019. They've drafted another 11 in the top 100 picks. And oh, yeah, by the way, Nate George, who's a little further away, but Nate George was one of their best draft picks recently. It was a high school outfielder who really blossomed in 2025. That's a lot of outfielders.
Yeah, an absolute ton. So, I mean, it's a weird trade. I saw it hit last night as I was writing up some of these Rule 5 names, and I think you had actually just written it up. And, yeah, I had trouble kind of wrapping my head around it, but I think the return for the Orioles is the most shocking thing. I'm not shocked that the Angels could be coerced into making a trade for an injured pitcher that may not be a good long-term investment, but, you know, has a sizzle kind of name. But, you know, there's a new pitching coach with the Angels that, you know, obviously has a pretty good track record too. Maybe he's going to be able to unlock some stuff with Grayson Rodriguez. It's going to be the best park Rodriguez has ever pitched in, you know, in terms of, you know, run environment, that sort of thing. So I think there's some positives here for Rodriguez. It's just a matter of like, can this guy throw 150 innings in the season? It may not be next year, but in the coming years. And I think that's where the value is going to derive from. I don't quite get, like I said, I don't quite get the Taylor Ward fit for the Orioles, but we'll see if they make a trade with some other outfielders here.
But that's okay. So this is the two things where I struggle with it. Let's say that Grayson Rodriguez is a non-durable starting pitcher who can never get more than 100 innings in a season over the next four seasons before he hits free agency. If you said that was the case, let's say that, again, let's throw the other hypothetical. Let's say that this Aldo Debrisman is not enough and he goes to spring training and ends up having Tommy John, which, by the way, all of these injuries, I'm not saying all of them, but it seems like almost all of these issues that he's had can really stem from he's had this one issue. And as pitchers are wont to do, look back at Andrew Painter, there's other examples. Getting cut on, getting surgery is a significant decision. And so players like to try to rehab it. He's had multiple years of trying to rehab this, but let's say that he missed all of 26 and part of 27 and then came back and was more durable, right? So whatever way it is, whether he misses a full year over the next four or he misses parts of different seasons, if he averages 100 innings of what he did in 2024 pre-injury over the next four, considering the salaries he's had, I think the Angels win the trade because, you know, again, now you could say that the Orioles are all in it for 26. And so that's more important. And you can make that argument or whatever, but 1 year of a, let's say 2-3 war player with power, you know, okay, good corner outfitter with power at $13, $14 million versus a starting pitcher, 100 innings a year, 1-2 war player for, let's say 4 years of that at major league minimum or a little bit above it this year, modest salary next year, modest, but a little bit more salary the next year, and then bigger salary in 2029. Most teams would rather have the B there unless they are really going all in for next year because cost-controlled young starting pitching, even if not durable, is very valuable to teams. It's a fascinating trade. We got more of it over at baseballamerica.com. We also have a top 10 prospects meeting that we have to go over tools grades and all. So it never stops here at BA. We love it. We love it. But for that, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.